From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 17th day of November 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor will be here to take up the cash grain markets. Along the way, I'll tell you about the December 5 and 6 Ag Masters program that the Crop Sciences Department will host at the I Hotel right here in Urbana-Champaign. And then take you to Southern Illinois and our Dixon Springs Research Center, the birthplace of modern no-till. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois. Support comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of five Illinois Farm Economics Summit meetings December 12th through the 16th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details on their website, farmdoc.illinois.edu. In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby contract and the soft red winter wheat, a loss today, down 24 and a quarter cents at $5.92 and a half. The March at 6:12, 25 and three quarters lower. In July, soft red, down 26 and a half at 6:45 and three quarters. The hard red finished in Kansas City at $6.93 and a half, down 23 and a half cents for the day. December corn futures, 28 and a quarter lower, 614 and a half the settlement price. The March at 623 and a quarter, down 28 and three quarters. May futures, 630, down 28. July down 27, 633 and a half the settlement. And December futures of next year at $5.60 and a quarter, down 21 cents on the day. And then the soybeans down 19 and a half in the January, $11.68 and a quarter, the settlement price. The March at 11.78 and a half, 19 and a half lower. May, 11.88, down 19 and three quarters. July soybeans, $11.96 and a half, down 20 and a half. And next year's November for 2012 at $11.79 and a half a bushel, down 22 and a quarter for the day. Bean meal futures finished at $300 even, down $18. Or rather, bean meal finished at $294.50, down $1.90. And December bean oil at $51.40, down $1.08. It's best if I don't read the oat number for the bean meal number. It was actually $3 for oats, and they were down 18 cents. And then the live cattle futures. Mercantile exchange, December contract, $121, down $1.05, and the feeders at a 143.12 and a half for the day, 27 and a half cents lower. Lean hogs on the afternoon at $87.45 finished $1.90 higher for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil, December futures, $99.04 a barrel, $3.55 lower. Ethanol at $2.62 and 7 tenths, down 6 and 8 tenths. Natural gas at $3.42 and 4 tenths. That's 8 cents higher for the day. And December heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.08 and a tenth of a cent, of 5 and 3 tenths of a cent lower. Gold futures at $1,719.80 an ounce, down $54 in the Dow. A loss at this hour at 170 points, 11,735. The last trade, the dollar at 78.26 is up 0.25. The CRB index down 7.9 at 314.52. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon says that we will see sunny skies, a high near just 41 degrees. It'll be breezy with a west wind at 10 to 20 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 25 this afternoon. Mostly clear this evening, a low of 27, south-southwest wind, 7 to 14 miles an hour, gusting to 18. And Friday, sunny skies, a high near 51. Breezy south-southwest winds at 15 to 18, increasing to 26 to 29 miles an hour. They could gust all the way to 39. And then Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 36. South winds between 13 and 16, gusting to 23. Saturday, mostly cloudy skies, a high of 56 degrees. Breezy, a southwest wind between 15 and 23 miles an hour, gusting all the way to 32. By the time we get to Saturday night, a 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy. Breezy, a low of 44. Sunday, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a high of 51. And Sunday night, showers, cloudy, a low of 38. Monday, mostly cloudy and 48. Monday night, cloudy and 35. Tuesday, showers, partly sunny. Then later in the day, a high of 48 degrees.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Kind of an ugly day in Chicago today. Tell me about it, please.
Well, couple things are driving it. I think, of course, what we've been talking about for some time is the European debt crisis and how that will play out over time. And, of course, that's been putting pressure, downward pressure on the euro, which in turn then puts upward strength in the dollar. So anytime you have the dollar strengthening, that means it's going to take less dollars to buy a bushel of corn or a bushel of beans or a bushel of wheat. So that's been a key negative influence, I think, hanging over the market for some time. Actually, that encourages fund liquidation with these outside market activities. The other thing is that the higher prices this summer just pretty well choked export demand clear across the board. We came in here this morning and we saw another round of disappointing sales. Soybeans weren't bad, came in a little better than expected, but for the second week in a row, we sold less than 10 million bushels of corn. This is the time of year you should be selling 40 or 50 or 60 million bushels, not 8 or 9 million bushels. So export demand, at least over the past 4 weeks or so, USDA has revised it down to 1.6, but there seems to be adequate supplies of corn in Europe and the Black Sea area. A lot of wheat. So there's even some talk that we're going to see some further downward adjustments maybe in export demand for corn. Wheat came in at a little bit above 10 million, about 11 or 12 million bushels. Again, that for the last 4 weeks, that's kind of what we've been selling, 10 to 12 million. That's below the level that we need to sell if we're going to meet USDA's projection, and we're not quite halfway through the season, but we're getting close. Again, stiff competition from Black Sea area in the world market. Soybeans did come in here at 27 or 28 million bushels, I guess, came in a little better than expected. We did get some confirmation of China purchases, but most people in the trade kind of feel that bean export demand is going to kind of fall off the cliff sometime here after the first of the year. So you've got the European situation, you've got weak export demand, and then I think there's a general nervousness, too, of what's going on in Washington and whether or not politicians can get their arms around the exploding U.S. deficit that we're seeing. So a lot of noise in the marketplace. When you look at average seasonals, this is very typical. Typically, wheat kind of falls into kind of a late November low when you look at seasonalities. When you look at December corn futures or any kind of corn futures, you take the last 30 years and average them out. Very often you fall into a first week December low before the market really begins to kick to the upside on the seasonals. And soybeans, you do have a period of weakness here prior to Thanksgiving, and then you kind of have a little bubble up maybe around Thanksgiving, but then again you go back down during the first part of December. So seasonally, everything seems to be pretty well on track. The outside market activity, of course, are the driving forces here.
You mentioned that the expectation by some traders is that soybean exports will fall off a cliff after Jan 1. Why is that the case?
Well, South America still has beans to sell, believe it or not, from last year's crop. They've been in storage, but they still have inventory to sell. And then, of course, you're going to start seeing new inventory begin to move into the pipeline probably late March, early April. But everybody's expecting a pretty big crop out of South America. So far, the weather pattern has been generally favorable. So all of your emphasis of buying new soybean product, world buyers are all going to basically shift their focus to picking up those South American inventories starting in the April timeframe.
Speaking of shifts, when you look at the USDA numbers and some of the numbers that come out of South America, other parts of the world, they show a shift in the world landscape towards corn hectares or acres in Ukraine and Brazil, Argentina in this year. Do you think that is the start of a long-standing shift for those areas?
Well, those are definitely going to be, the Ukraine is going to be a big growth area. That is where you're seeing, you're going to see your multinational grain companies are going to be in that area because they see a lot of expansion, and that is going to be one of the main areas of you know, corn and wheat exports as we go down the road. So that is the big growth area. We still have a lot of growth area yet to develop yet in South America. You know, for the most part, U.S. agriculture is pretty much a mature industry when you look at growth. I mean, if we're going to get growth in the United States, it's going to come from yield. It's not going to come from acreage expansion.
And finally, this drop today, anything that producers should be really wary of, or is it just a bump in the ride for the marketplace in the,
well,
least the short
anytime
term?
You know, take corn down 28 to 30 cents, it needs to get your attention. Same way with soybeans down about 20. I think for the most part is a seasonal play. I think somewhere in here this thing's going to catch and we're going to get a bounce. Now, once that bounce occurs, I think, you know, they're going to have to reevaluate where they really want to be going into the winters, because at this point in time, a couple things that they're betting on. They're going to bet on some, if you want a favorable prices or higher prices, you're going to have to bet on some weather problems out of South America. Number two, some kind of resolution to the European situation that would stop strengthening the dollar. And then maybe the third one would be that maybe things get so bad that Bernanke starts up the printing press again. He needs a bunch of zeros on his typewriter. The world currency devaluation is going to continue to take place, but remember, we're working ratios between one currency to the other currency, and sometimes that can be misleading.
Okay, thanks so much, Dan.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world. Visit us online at WILLAG.org. Well, all week long, I've been telling you a bit about the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. It'll be held the week of December the 12th across the state of Illinois in hopes that you will register online at the FarmDoc website. The week prior to that, I'll be hosting a program for the crop sciences folks. It's called the Ag Masters Conference, and I hope you'll join us for that one, too. More about the Ag Masters in just a moment. Well, the third annual University of Illinois Ag Masters Conference is set for next month. You can register today for the December 5 and 6 event to be held at the I Hotel just to the south of the Assembly Hall, right here on the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign. The conference format will be similar to last year, with a single general session. Yours truly will host that part of the program. That to be followed by a day and a half of advanced classes designed to challenge you with the latest information on specialized and relevant topics. The general session theme will focus on the challenges that pest resistance has created and examine some potential solutions. We've been hearing about glyphosate-resistant weeds for a while now, and some insect resistance to BT has even cropped up. We will begin the conference with a thought-provoking presentation from Leonard Gianessi. He's the director of the Crop Protection Research Institute based in Washington, D.C. His comments will focus on the importance of herbicides to U.S. agriculture and why their continuing use is essential in his mind to maintain current levels of productivity. Following his remarks, other speakers will continue to address the resistance issue from their own unique specialties and experiences, including the development of fungicide, herbicide, and BT resistance. The Ag Masters Conference is unique because participants can tailor-make their program by choosing 6 advanced sessions from a lineup of 12 specialized classes. Now, each advanced session is taught using a classroom-style setting with a maximum of 40 students per class. In these small classroom settings, instructors are able to stimulate questions and increase the level of dialogue. The advanced sessions will include a variety of emerging and important topics, including Goss's wilt of corn, mystery application products, potential invasions of stink bugs into corn and soybeans, plant responses to environmental extremes, protecting your business with a record retention program, and the unexpected consequences of glyphosate applications, along with improving the effectiveness of adjuvants. Now, many of the advanced sessions will be taught by out-of-state speakers from other universities, including Iowa State University, Purdue University, Southern Illinois University, University of Arkansas, University of Maryland, and the University of Wisconsin. There's still time to register online for the Ag Masters program. The cost is $300. Registration can be filled out on the web at www.cropsciconferences.com. That's cropsci, S-C-I, conferences.com. I was looking at my winter meeting calendar today. You just heard about the Ag Masters program. That's December 5 and 6. And then the Illinois Farm Economics Summits that I'll help host on the week of the 12th of December. And, of course, the Corn and Soybean Classics that are coming up in January. And then thinking about the other things that I might be doing. For instance, not next week, but the following one, I'm hopeful that I'll be headed to Southern Illinois along with my colleagues from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences to deal with some flooding issues as they relate to USDA and the government. Our job, of course, to report on that or to tape those events for reporting a bit later. Now, I may or may not go, but it reminded me that Dixon Springs in Southern Illinois, which is one of our research stations that belong to the U of I, has a rich and wonderful history, and that it's just a beautiful part of the country. It's also the birthplace of the modern no-till era for agriculture. More on that from Southern Illinois in a moment. It was here in deep Southern Illinois, close to the Shawnee National Forest and the furthest north cypress swamp in the United States, that the modern era of farming was challenged and changed. The lands roll, and when it rains, wash away into the Ohio and Mississippi rivers by the ton. Or at least they did, until a University of Illinois agronomist decided there had to be a better way to grow crops on the hillsides. For 37 years, George McKibben experimented and evangelized what was to become the modern era of no-till farming. Illinois agronomist Steve Ebelhair explains the effects of the research can be seen throughout the Southern Illinois landscape.
Oh, absolutely, because back in the 30s and 40s, when the area was still under conventional tillage system, we saw a lot of really gully erosion, a lot of water coming off the fields just saturated with soil, just dark soil moving off the profiles, off the landscapes. And now when you see a rain, you know, it's mostly clearer water, not a lot of soil movement because the residues are helping hold the soil in place. So we don't see the gullies that we once saw under conventional till system where the water has moved tremendous amounts of soil off the profiles.
What really made George McKibben's no-till experiments at Dixon Springs work as a soil-saving tool is pretty simple. And there's a reason it took so long for farmers to adopt the practice, meaning reasons it wasn't thought of or worked on prior to the 1960s. The technology to control weeds hadn't been developed and adapted to the farm before that time. The herbicides allowed McKibben's no-till experiments to work, says Ebelhair.
It's really the merger of good weed control herbicides coming into the market and the pioneering efforts of George McKibben that really made no-till take off in the early 60s into the 70s.
And then in the mid-1990s, when the herbicide-resistant varieties of soybeans were introduced, no-till really began to boom. The crop had been modified to withstand being sprayed with a herbicide, and no-till acres around the nation and in Illinois jumped. The first time no-till soybean acres outnumbered any other tillage method in the state of Illinois came in 2007, 41 years after George McKibben planted his first no-till experiment at Dixon Springs. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Gives you just a bit of something to ponder as you consider that water hemp that might be in your field that's resistant to glyphosate and maybe three or four other families of herbicides, and what it might mean to saving our soils and moving those not from staying on the landscape back into the river system and weed control. Herbicides are an important part of what's been happening in the world of agriculture for the better part of 50 years.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I checked to see if Pete Levitt is around just yet. We usually talk to him after the break to take up the agricultural weather forecast. He is not. So I made a quick phone call and asked Matt Bennett if we could hold him off just for a bit and spend a little bit more time with him to discuss the cash grain market. We'll do that at about 32 after the hour for those of you who are still with us. If you aren't and you'd like to hear what Matt has to say, you can always do that pretty easily. Just visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming from the pre-opening market report to the closing market report, everything else in between, and a way to subscribe to our weekend newsletter. Just hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page. It's all at willag.org. By the way, if you just call this number, 217-333-3434, you can get the updated numbers for the close and the open at 10:15 and 3:15 daily.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's Homemade Bread Day. It's also a feast to St. Elizabeth of Hungary, patron of bakers. On this day in agricultural history in 1749, Nicholas Appert was born. Appert was a French cook and inventor who developed the method of preserving food that we call canning. He originally used glass jars sealed with wax and reinforced with wire. In 1865, William Burton was born. An American chemist, he devised the first thermal cracking process that more than doubled the proportion of gasoline yield from crude oil. His high heat, high pressure process saved more than 1 billion barrels of crude in its first 15 years of operation. In 1869, the Suez Canal opened, linking the Red Sea with the Mediterranean Sea. In 1988, Walmart opened its first supercenter in Wheeler, Oklahoma. It carried fresh meat, produce, dairy products, and baked goods, in addition to other standard supermarket products and discount store merchandise. And in 1996, the World Food Summit concluded. Delegates promised full efforts to ease world hunger. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us, Matt Bennett of TGM in Windsor, Illinois, to take up the cash grain market. Thanks so much, Matt, for taking the time with us today.
No problem, Todd.
I bet you have had a lot of phone calls today as farmers watched the marketplace for corn plummet.
Yep. Yeah, it's been one of those days where everyone's kind of up in arms about what's going on. But I think, there's a large percentage of guys that I had a feeling the market was a little uneasy here the last several days. So not everyone's shocked, I guess, is the
They're
point.
Not all shocked. Were they moved earlier in the week to make a brand new sale either for today or for in the future?
Well, we've actually bought a fair amount of corn this week. A lot of guys have been trying to make a decision of what to do here. You know, with the basis being the way it is, they realize the market's been kind of trying to coax those bushels out of their hands. So, some guys have been able to do it, and of course, there's been several guys that haven't been able to do it. So this is one of those days where there's several guys a little irritated.
Yeah, I'm sure they are a little irritated, but not much they can do about the mess in Chicago, and except for wait it out. Do you think they will be rewarded eventually if they wait it out? Is this marketplace a place where we will have a smooth transition in the short crop, long tail, or do you think it'll be a bumpy ride on the way down?
That's kind of a tough question, but I mean, I guess we've been trading sideways for so long in here that most people are kind of expecting us to break one way or the other. And, I've ran out of reasons here recently to break it out to the upside. So, I guess my gut feeling is that we're going to have a real tough time kind of clawing back up to a $7 level or anything like that on the cash basis. And, my gut feeling on it is if they're patient, yeah, they might get another shot at it, but we could be looking several months down the road.
Yet the basis itself is really strong, isn't it?
Oh, there's no question. Now, we've seen just a touch of a weakening here and there. But, I think today maybe Decatur's backed off maybe 2 cents. But, we haven't seen anything drastic.
So it must simply all be domestic usage for the market for corn? Or is it still backfilling what was not left from last year? What's your thought on how this can possibly be taking place?
Well, I guess there's a variety of things. You're talking like what made the market jump like it did today?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the export number this morning was horrible.
Right.
Ethanol number yesterday was great, but most guys are kind of discounting that because they're wondering what's going to happen with this blender's credit.
Mm-hmm.
And they think most
guys know
are,
what's going to happen with the blender's credit. What
right.
happens with the production is the question.
Right, exactly. I mean, the mandate's still going to be there, but, for all intents and purposes, I'm sure it is, but, what's going to happen after the first of the year, I guess, because we quite honestly aren't selling near as much corn, to the ethanol guys after the first year, is what we were selling to them for the last 3 months of the year a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think there's any question that there's a large percentage of people that are pretty worried about what our demand is going to look like here after the first of the year.
What are your bids for the day?
Our bids for the day, cash and Jan corn, are both 621. Beans, cash would be 11.43 and Jan 11.51.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He is in Windsor, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Happens each and every Thursday afternoon. You have a great afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.
adm.com/farmerview.